Well, this is going to be, I call it a historical episode of The Far Middle. I'm Nick DeOlias, the host, creator of this space of rational and thoughtful civic discourse, and you can find all prior episodes of The Far Middle on Apple, Amazon, and Spotify. And if you don't like any of those platforms, you can go to my website, nickdeolias.com, and you'll find all those archived episodes of The Far Middle, along with scores of additional content that I post on there that I suspect you will enjoy. Now, why is this episode historic or special? Because it's our 2024 presidential election special installment. I waited a week from the election to give myself some time to digest what we saw, and frankly, to give you some time to process as well. And now we can compare notes, as they say, and boy, do we have an extensive set of notes to compare. I'm going to start with wishing our veterans out there a belated Happy Veterans Day, forever grateful for what you did and what it means to our way of life. And how about a quick sports dedication before we dive into it? How about one that fits with Veterans Day and with presidential politics? I think I have someone who's going to fit the bill. President Gerald Ford. First, the veteran part. After he completed law school and right after the 1941 attack on Pearl Harbor, Ford enlisted in the Navy. He received a commission as ensign on the Naval Reserve, and he reported for active duty at Annapolis in Maryland. He was eventually sent in the middle of 43, May of 1943, to the pre-commissioning detachment for a new aircraft carrier, the USS Monterey. And while he was on board, the carrier participated in many actions in the Pacific Theater after its commissioning with the 3rd and the 5th Fleets in late 1943 and 1944. Ford received military awards, was honorably discharged. He's just another example, add him to the list of the greatest generation. Now, did you know that President Ford also had an interesting and an accomplished athletic career? He attended Michigan, where he played center and linebacker for the school's football team, two-way player, much like the recent dedication subject and fellow veteran Chuck Bednarik, who also was a two-way player. And President Ford led the Wolverines to two undefeated seasons and twin national titles in 1932 and 1933. In his senior year in 1934, the team suffered a bit of a steep decline, only ended up winning one game, but President Ford was still the team's star player and its leader. His teammate voted him the most valuable player that year. And one assistant coach on the team noted, "They felt Jerry was one guy who would stay and fight in a losing cause." And that actually became an ironic harbinger, an accurate descriptor for Ford post-Watergate as president. Here's a look into President Ford's character. I think you'll find this interesting. During his senior year, there was a controversy that developed on the team when Georgia Tech said it would not play a scheduled game with Michigan if a black player named Willis Ward took the field for the Wolverines. Now, Michigan agreed to Georgia Tech's demand. And Ford, President Ford, was Ward's best friend on the team. They roomed together. So Ford threatened to quit the team in response to the university's decision. But he eventually agreed to play against Georgia Tech when his friend Ward personally asked him to play and not leave the team. Now that's a leader, constant listeners, and a great American. So our special election episode, Sports Dedication, goes to President Gerald Ford. Now we're cleared for takeoff on our post-election analysis. I'm going to start by answering a question that I've received the past, this went on for probably 5 months, and I've received this question at least a dozen times from constant listeners of the podcast, from those who follow me on X and LinkedIn, and both of which, by the way, you can find me under those platforms by just typing in Nick DeOlias. You'll see me there. But the question I kept getting hit with was, why am I so quiet on the presidential election front, and why haven't I weighed in on the election itself? Indeed, I've remained largely silent on the race once Vice President Harris was handed the slot taken from President Biden, and she squared off against President Trump through to Election Day. And I was silent for a couple of reasons. The biggest reason, everybody was barking about this election from all sides. And another barking dog was the last thing this world, country, or a constant listener base needed. But there was a second reason. I've always been more interested in policy matters than political matters. That typically comes out every episode of this podcast. And I do understand, I accept that one bleeds into the other, one impacts the other, but I just don't get much interested in the political ground game and tactics, and I certainly don't understand politicians. So the far middle and your host largely sat out the insanity of overanalysis and spin that was the 2024 presidential election. And it was so nuts the way that it unfolded. And it just goes to prove that one of my heroes, H.L. Mencken, was correct when he said two things. One, he said, democracy is also a form of worship. It is the worship of jackals by jackasses. And the second thing he said was, democracy is the art and science of running the circus from the monkey cage. Damn straight. But now it's time to weigh in with rational logic as to what the election was about and what it told us. And there is a clear message and theme. A single word sums up everything we've been subjected to, that we've observed, that we thought, and that we've experienced in the 2024 presidential race. And that single word that captures it all, from message to theme, exposed. I'm going to apply that word over and over this episode. It's a perfect fit, exposed. Truths have been exposed. Fictions were exposed. Old trends were exposed as obsolete. New trends were exposed as being very impactful. Indeed, the biggest single takeaway of the 2024 presidential election is the universe it exposed. Let's get into it. Those election results, they exposed what the real choice was. We were sold, we were told it was a choice between Trump and Harris, between Democrat-Republican, even a choice between Trump and Biden. All of those, I think, were wrong. This election was a choice between Trump and anti-Trump. Or, if you prefer, country on right track versus country on the wrong track. There was no middle ground. And when America had to pick one, it went for Trump and wrong track in need of a course correction, big time. And there's a lot of reasons why, which tie to additional things that got exposed, which we'll get into. And one of the biggest was how the race and election exposed Trump's strengths, his pros, so to speak. There were many that were exposed for all to see. For a lot of Americans, he became anything from a hero to someone with an incredible amount of bravery or guts that was exposed when he was shot in Butler, Pennsylvania, and then how he reacted seconds afterward. It's still hard to believe that event occurred, like completely surreal. Most of all, I think, were his actions second after being shot. I don't know if I would have reacted anything close to the way he did. So love him or hate him, I don't think anyone can rationally question his guts after seeing what unfolded after the shooting. And he became more likable as his personality was exposed on the campaign trail during a couple of stunts that he performed, you know, your typical political theater and stunts, the McDonald's drive-thru. His personality came out in that, and it was likable. The garbage worker stunt was another one. And then the Al Smith Catholic Charity Dinner sort of gave him an opportunity for all to see where it was exposed that, you know, he's a pretty likable guy when he was bantering back and forth with a lot of the celebrities at the event. Trump was exposed as a great team builder when he selected Vance, who was much more of an asset than Walz, as we will soon discuss. And Trump was also exposed as someone who could unite and construct a great team from very different elements when RFK Jr. and Elon Musk rolled onto the team. I mean, who saw that coming, say, a year ago? Trump's energy and work ethic, I think those were exposed in this race. Yeah, he's pushing 80. He's no spring chicken, but he doesn't seem to stop ever. Boundless energy, and it contrasted quite sharply, I think, to President Biden and Vice President Harris. The enthusiasm of his supporters, that was exposed for all to see. You can't deny it. I mean, his rallies were large, fervent, throwbacks to politics from prior ages, the stuff we used to read about. We got to a certain extent to witness it firsthand this go around. And the fact that he had a bona fide plan for governing, that was exposed. Whether it was a plan economically, domestically, geopolitically, you sort of knew what you were going to get, and that was refreshing. But, you know, Trump isn't perfect. He's got some downsides, his negatives, and they were also exposed in the lead up to election. Let's start with his mouth. Yeah, this might have been a more controlled Trump this time around, but still someone who largely lacks a filter. And that turns a lot of people off. And his appetite for outspending budgets and deficits and debt. still seems to be intact and was exposed in the run-up to election night when you started to hear more about the policies. And at some point soon, this nation is going to need to deal with a debt crisis, and no one, including President Trump, seems interested in addressing it. Now, Vice President Harris also has strengths or pros that were exposed in this election. Many wanted to give her the benefit of the doubt in a serious look because she stood to be the first female president. The first anything president always has a feel-good element attached to it, but I think it really came out and was exposed in this campaign because we have been and we remain a melting pot in the end. And the election exposed our ongoing desire, at least many of us, to be inclusive and to see these types of developments unfold as the nation progresses through its historical journey. Now, the election also exposed how her team, I think, did a great job harping on Project 2025, which I still am not sure what it specifically is. I've heard so much about it, but I'm still trying to get my hands on the official document and read it from front to end to maybe dedicate an episode toward it, or maybe try to compare and contrast how we might see it manifest with Trump policy in his second term. But the Harris campaign exposed, I think, effective use of the fear factor of the unknown in that regard when it came to Project 2025. And the VP Harris campaign exposed the importance of reproductive rights for many female voters. That focus is not going to go away. And last, the election marathon exposed, I think, another strength of Vice President Harris. She displays a likable first impression, upbeat, smiling, pleasant, and first impressions matter in elections and in life. But the second and subsequent impressions, those were problems, and those got exposed, unfortunately, for her as well. So speaking of sort of exposing some negatives, let's cover the negatives of Vice President Harris that got some exposure in this election campaign. She didn't display a strong work ethic or intensity level that was befitting of a presidential candidate. And that was exposed loud and clear. In some ways, her efforts made President Biden's home basement campaign in 2020 look aggressive. Her lack of substance got exposed, I think, big time. Now, the word salad answers, the blank stares to tough questions, the freezing up when the teleprompter glitched, most people figured out that there wasn't much behind the veneer that got exposed. And the flip-flop reversals on numerous sort of big, meaty, substantive issues that exposed either dishonesty or an inability to think things through. The fracking issue, the borders, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There were many of them, but it was painful to watch sort of that unfold as it got exposed. Her choice of vice president. I mentioned VP Vance, but her choice of vice president, that was a massive tactical error that got exposed. Walz was a big liability, frankly, a laughingstock. Meanwhile, Pennsylvania Governor Shapiro would have been such a great asset on the campaign trail for Vice President Harris. I'm still, to this day, puzzled why that hasn't happened. There's got to be a story behind the story. Now, her inability to differentiate herself from President Biden, but yet boldly claim that she was about sort of flipping the page and a new chapter and change, that, I think, was embarrassingly exposed. And the now infamous question about what she would have done different than Biden and her answer on The View, that did much harm to her campaign. And the lack of enthusiasm at what were largely staged rallies for the vice president, I think that got exposed in this campaign. A lack of energy and, frankly, a lack of genuineness didn't help the effort when it came to Vice President Harris. Then there were a slew of false fictions, I'll call them, that were exposed during the election. And in their place, realities were exposed for all to see. Now, what might they be? Well, one, elites have claimed that Trump's rise, right, that was a symptom of the dying gasp of white majority America, its insecurity, freaking out about cultural change, demographic changes. I think a lot of that was nonsense, and it got exposed this election. President Trump made big gains among almost every demographic group. Latinos, I think 45% went for Trump. That's a history-making number for a Republican presidential candidate. African Americans were up double-digit for Trump in terms of support, I think at 13%. which was almost double, not quite double what it was for him in 2020. Asians were almost at 40%. Women were 46% was the last data point I saw. And then this was the most, maybe to me, surprising, the young, 46% for Trump. So the only demographic that I saw that Vice President Harris made gains on was white college educated women and those over 65, male or female over 65. And those gains, ironically or interestingly, I think would be the more appropriate term, were much smaller gains than the aforementioned Trump gains. So the gains for Harris with white college educated women and those over 65, much smaller in percent magnitude than the other demographics we mentioned for the Trump gains. Another thing, Hollywood and celebrity, that got exposed as somewhere between irrelevant to working against and hurting Vice President Harris. Robert De Niro, The View, Stephen King, Taylor Swift, Kimmel, LeBron, on and on. None of them or their endorsements seemed to make a difference to Vice President Harris. And frankly, where they did make a difference, it might have been a negative one. The celebrity elite got exposed as being out of touch and largely irrelevant to people when punching ballots. And then there is the mainstream media. Man, how they got exposed. The damage media did to its reputation this election might be permanent, might be irreversible. The 60 Minutes heavily edited interview with Vice President Harris on the, I think it was the topic of Israel, it became the exemplar of media bias and how it places its fingers on the scales of balanced, objective journalism. And don't forget MSNBC during Trump's Madison Square Garden rally, where MSNBC was superimposing parallels to Nazi rallies. Ridiculous, yet that's what the outlet did. Business media, hello CNBC and Wall Street Journal, it was pretty clear that they didn't care much for Trump as well, and they were constantly slanting their headlines and stories to try to hurt his effort and help the vice president, at least from my perspective. It was embarrassing collectively to observe, and a major backfire across mainstream media was exposed. An assumption that was exposed as false in the 2024 election was that early mail-in voting favored Democrats. Now, that was certainly the case, I think, in 2020. But it looks like, based on what I've seen, the Republicans' ground game caught up to that front in 2024. The stats on this are still all over the place, right? It depends on where you're at and what you're looking at. But it does appear that the gap has drastically narrowed to where mail-in votes are not the advantage they once were for Democrats. There were other losers that also got exposed. One big group of losers who are ironically touted as winners, which is funny, are Nobel laureates in economics. You know, they penned letters individually and in flocks assuring us that the Trump economic plan is going to be a disaster or much worse than the vice president's plan. And then the media hyped and amplified this message everywhere you looked, except not many people cared to listen because they saw through the facade is nothing more than partisanship. And Nobel winners in economics, they got exposed and their credibility sat at an all-time low. The climate change cult, it got exposed. Embracing it seemed to present an existential threat to the Harris campaign, so we didn't hear really anything at all about the supposed existential crisis of climate change on the campaign trail. It just sort of disappeared as a talking point. But many voters didn't forget in places like Pennsylvania, and it drove them to President Trump. They weren't liking the imposition of such a harsh religion upon them. The cult of climate got exposed. And certainly this election exposed many losers or losing propositions. But my vote, pun intended, for the biggest loser that got exposed would be to pollsters. Their record, to put it bluntly, sucked. Did you see that Iowa poll a few days before the election where it showed Vice President Harris leading? President Trump rolled in Iowa. Discredit that pollster. Every expert said it was coming down to Pennsylvania. It didn't come down to Pennsylvania because it was a blowout. The day of the election, the Wall Street Journal proclaimed the election was coming down to 7 states, which is sort of silly. I mean, why not just say it comes down to 50 states? But anyway, all 7 of those states, they went for President Trump. Pollsters should be largely ignored, shunned, or ridiculed at this point. You're better off being uninformed than misinformed. Jeez. There's other myths that got exposed last week. the myth that a Republican would not win the popular vote, and thus the Electoral College, you know, had to go. Rubbish. Trump easily won the popular vote. The myth that labeling Trump a felon would cripple his support, that got exposed. Didn't hurt him, might have actually helped him look more or appear more of a sympathetic figure to voters. Sort of tearing up democracy to protect everyone from a supposed threat to democracy, that was exposed as a fatal tactic. So when you remove the sitting president from the race after he won the primary, when you engage in whole of government lawfare, when you try to kick an opposing candidate off the ballot, as things look like true threats to democracy, and voters, they'll tend to respond accordingly. The myth that appeasement makes the world a safer place for America, that got exposed this election. Soft on Iran, hindering Israel as it tries to defend itself, China loving what it sees with President Biden, Vice President Harris, none of that helped the Harris campaign, and all of it was in plain view to most Americans. How about how the myth of Black and Hispanic voters being captives of the Democratic Party as opposed to self-thinkers and astute voters? Exposed. People largely voted self-interest and for themselves. They thought for themselves this election. They didn't worry about fitting into predefined categories. And then the myth of voter participation in elections and its waning in America, that got exposed. I think our Republican democracy is alive and well, at least when it comes to election turnout. And how about the truths that got exposed with this election? There were a few crucial truths that were exposed. Secure borders was exposed as a vital must for Americans. No secure borders, then no secure nation. The crisis with illegal immigration needs fixed now. 4 years of the Biden administration got exposed as a painful experience for most Americans. And Vice President Harris had to run on the Biden administration record, and it wasn't pretty. And while media lost all credibility, another type of influencer was exposed as quite effective. I'm not sure how you label the type of influencer, how you label them or it, but I know some notables who are included within them or it. Bill Maher, Senator John Fetterman, Joe Rogan, Mike Tyson. Now, that's a diverse group, from podcasters to senators, left to right. Some live in politics, some don't. Some are Democrats, some are Republicans. But they all come across as thinking for themselves and telling it as they see it. And they all felt, at least it felt to me, like they were helping President Trump much more than Vice President Harris. They saw what many of us saw and confirmed what we were seeing. And speaking of influencing, the election exposed wildcard sources of influence for President Trump that popped up. And I'm talking primarily here about Peanut, the lovable squirrel, who was murdered by the state of New York just prior to the election. State stormtroopers breaking into a home and detaining the residents and killing their pet squirrel. Why? Because they didn't have a license for the pet. Meanwhile, anything goes on the streets of New York City. Peanut became an 11th hour martyr for the evils of big government that resonated to people who didn't even follow politics. Game plans got exposed. Vice President Harris was employing something akin to a prevent defense in football, but it didn't prevent defeat. President Trump was aggressive, constantly campaigning as Trump, and that worked. Coalitions got exposed. Many middle-class blue-collar workers, they left the Democratic coalition. Meanwhile, many affluent, suburban, white-collar workers, a lot of them remote workers, they joined the Democratic coalition. And then there were scores of minority voters who turned red. Many Jews went for Trump. The election exposed that the party with the most diverse coalition this time around was the Republicans, not the Democrats, which is fascinating, and I think it'll be fascinating to see how that evolves over time. And that's because the old way of breaking down voter demographics, that got exposed this time around as obsolete. It's not going to be by race. It's not going to be by gender. The election exposed the breakdown of voters today is increasingly things like paycheck-to-paycheck voters versus affluent elite voters. And it's why places like Bucks County in Pennsylvania and rural counties with large African-American communities in North Carolina and South Texas counties with large Hispanic communities, it's why they flipped this election. Now, again, that's a generalization. It's a simplification. Those are always dangerous. for sure, and they're subject to many, many subparts and assumptions and exceptions. But to me, it seems to be the single largest separation that was exposed in this election when it came down to voter breakdown. And I think, to be frank, and not to be mean or harsh, but to be frank, that Vice President Harris might have been the worst major party candidate to run for president in our history, at least in the past 100 years of our history. And subsequent moves to attempt to cover or to hide some of those weaknesses, that became exposed, and it only made it worse. And then just maybe accountability was exposed in this election. Accountability for 4 years of running leftist policies. Accountability for unprepared candidates. Accountability for dismissing voter blocks. And accountability for colluding with a corrupt system and machine. Sometimes accountability gets exposed in ways that are surprising and unexpected. I hope you enjoyed this unconventional, unique assessment of the 2024 presidential election. It's a type of approach you only find in the far middle. And since it's time to close, I'm going to make a connection to and try to make some amends for someone, an elite celebrity that I mentioned earlier, whose endorsement of the vice president got exposed as not helping and probably hurting her campaign. And that's Robert De Niro. He is one of my favorite actors, even though his approaches to politics and discourse are lamentable. And on the air date of this episode, November 13th in 1980, the all-time great movie Raging Bull was released, premiered in New York the next day. Scorsese's film about the boxing great Jake LaMotta, The Raging Bull, with De Niro playing the lead role and winning the Oscar for it. De Niro gained 60 pounds to play LaMotta later in life. And the film helped Joe Pesci break out with his role as Jake LaMotta's brother. Raging Bull is an all-time classic film. The best scene in that movie, I think, is between De Niro and Pesci in the film, the LaMotta brothers sitting at a table where Jake LaMotta convinces his brother to start punching him in the face barefisted. Hit me in the face, De Niro. Had his best in a great scene. Check that scene out if you want to revisit. Now, don't go hitting anyone this week. Instead, stay connected to that far middle.